Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network for this Tuesday, September the 8th. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be on the show today.
And Fred Jackson.
Nice to be back after the long weekend.
What'd you do this weekend, Fred?
Spent a lot of time near a lake. Did some kayaking and picnics. Really had a good time.
That's great. I just don't think of you as a lake kind of guy. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Water ski?
No. I like the water, but not dangerously so.
The kayaking.
Kayak is nice and safe.
Was this like a little Tupelo lake or like an Elvis Presley, or was this more like a Smith Lake in Alabama?
Well, no, it was a Tupelo area lake.
Okay.
Lamar Bruce.
Yeah.
Just outside of a community, Saltillo, here in our neighborhood. So, yeah, very, very nice, very peaceful. And, it was so nice yesterday. The water was really calm, and get out there with the kayak. It was so nice and quiet. It was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds serene.
Yeah. Nice to get
unlike
away.
Unlike our political
scene. Yes, I was just saying that.
Here in the good old U.S. of A.
Uh-huh.
A lot to talk about today, in politics and otherwise. So we'll be joined by Dr. Frank Turek in quarter after. Frank's going to talk about slavery and the Old Testament. Is that the topic today? And we're talking to Sandy Rios at the bottom of the hour, our Director of Governmental Affairs. What's leading the news?
Well, what's Fred? Leading the news is what's going to happen 8 weeks from today, guys. 56 days to Election Day, 21 days to the first debate. So, like in previous presidential elections, the day, you know, Labor Day weekend, after that, it's the official start of everything. But this has to be one of the strangest election campaigns in history, especially when you were talking about Joe Biden. He hasn't traveled much yet. He was on the road a little bit last week. He was out Labor Day. He was in some worker's backyard yesterday. I'm not kidding.
What now?
Yeah.
He was, it was somebody's backyard yesterday. That's where he was campaigning. And he had a mask on, sitting in, I think, a lawn chair. And he had three or four people, like 8, 10, 12 feet from him. And I don't think the backyard was doing any lawn mowing lately. It's kind of a strange setting, but
yeah,
that's where he was. And he's had a few other events, which mostly made up of 8 or 9 reporters, friendly reporters in front of him. That's his rally these days. That's the extent of a rally for Joe Biden. So very, very strange.
Yeah, I didn't watch the event you're talking about.
The backyard rally?
Yes, I saw pictures.
Attended by four?
I saw pictures of it. And at first I thought it was a joke. I thought some Trump supporter put out this, you know, meme and it was a joke and it really wasn't Biden. And then the reporters, some of the people who were tweeting it were like, no, this is really a Biden event. Look, it's on his website. And it was the most bizarre situation. You had these metal chairs that did not look very welcoming. Then you had this metal glass table in the middle of the grass. And the grass wasn't just nice and green like the Rose Garden at the White House. This was like dirt, like a baseball field. And then you had these overgrown bushes in the back, like untouched woods. And I just thought, whose idea was this? Could there not be some better background to host a presidential candidate, a former vice president, host an event? But obviously not. Somebody set it up.
I'm seeing the pictures now. I typed in Joe Biden backyard. I got it.
Yeah.
I see what you're seeing here. You know what's going on with the vice president, former vice president, and his campaign is what they're trying to do is they see him ahead in the polls, right? 5 to 10 points in most cases. And so they see themselves as the favorite. Some would say the clear favorite. Now I'm trying to think like they think, the Biden campaign. So why put your candidate out there and risk him making some huge blunder more than he already does on a daily basis, and therefore costing him some supporters, some potential voters, if you don't have to? If you don't have to do that, why do it? They've already got the high risk debate, right, coming up, that we'll see whether that actually happens or not. So, if to use a sports analogy, for those who remember the old Dean Smith North Carolina basketball teams of the 70s and 80s, they, before the shot clock came around, they had what they called a four corners offense, Walker. And what they would have, they would put four players. The idea was North Carolina gets up by 10.
Burn the clock.
Yes. North Carolina gets up by 10, and then they put four players in the four corners, and they let their point guard dribble the ball around and run out the clock because there was no shot clock. That's the equivalent of what Joe Biden's team's trying to do here is run out the clock, minimize our chances for making big mistakes with our candidate because he's really not he's not up to par what he used to be. We all know that. So, you know, that's the strategy they've chosen.
Yeah, and we've talked about this. We've spoken about this on past shows, but I just don't know how he can debate. And I think you've predicted that they somehow they'll find a way to get out of the debates. And I'm beginning to believe more and more that his campaign is going to look for some way out of the debates.
When is the first debate, Fred? September the what?
It's 21 days from now, so that would be the 7th.
No, you're right. It's 8th.
Yeah, 21 days from now, 29th September. Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll see whether that happens or not. You also got to remember that low expectations can be met, all right, by almost anybody. If your team is playing another team and the other team is favored by 5 touchdowns, to use another sports analogy here, and your team only loses by 3 touchdowns, then you say, hey, we did better than we expected, right? I think that's going to be the standard for Joe Biden in the debate with Trump. Everybody expects Trump to win the debate handily. The Biden folks are what they're going to do, I think, is I'm not convinced they're going to have a debate yet. But if they have a debate, you just coach Biden to answer in simple couple, 3 sentences on things that he's knowledgeable about. If he doesn't have an answer, just give a couple sentences of something about something. And in other words, just try to get through it without making a big, big blunder.
Yeah.
You know, like saying the light bulb was not invented by Thomas Edison, like he did the other day. Did you see this?
I read the article. I read a report on it.
Did you see it, Fred?
Yeah, I read, like Walker, I read
it. CNN did not fact-check him.
No, of course not.
Washington Post did not fact-check him. Now, they fact-checked Trump, you know, on what he had for breakfast.
Right.
They interrupted him. They interrupted somebody at the White House the other day, CNN, because they mispronounced Kamala or Kamala.
Yeah.
So they fact-checked Trump and his team right there. So, yes. Joe Biden said the other day he was pandering to black folks, to black voters, like he does daily. And he said, the light bulb wasn't invented by a white guy. It was invented by a black guy. People don't know this history. Of course, that's what he said. Huh?
Wow.
Imagine if Trump said something like that.
Yeah.
George Washington was not the first president of our country. We all know that. Imagine if Trump had said, it's akin to that.
Yeah.
And so they're just hoping that Biden can make it to the finish line. And they're hoping there's enough anti-Trump sentiment out there to carry the day as I mentioned before, I call it the ham sandwich voter. That is, doesn't matter who's going against President Trump, they're going to vote for him because they can't stand Trump so much. Is there enough of that out there to carry the day? I don't know.
Right.
We'll have to wait and see.
But you know, guys, it has to worry people when Joe Biden, even when reading from a teleprompter, cannot get it right. And I just want to play you a little example that's going to be cut number four, Brent. Even when reading from a teleprompter, he's got problems. Cut four.
What will your administration do to help them give him that chance? Thank you.
Move it up here. You know, there used to be a basic bargain in this country.
Fund Social Security and eliminate Obamacare in the middle of a pandemic. End of quote.
What's the president doing? Look, Venezuela's top line message is President Trump's policy is an abject failure.
What you got here? Obviously, well, here's what's happening here, folks. And they're doing it basically shamelessly. The Biden campaign is giving questions to the reporters. Mm-hmm. And I put reporters in quotations. The reporters are then asking the questions to Joe Biden via a Zoom or a or in the rare setting in person, where Joe Biden, you watch him, he'll say, my staff will call on the questions now. Not him. He's not doing impromptu give and take like Trump does every day, rope line stuff. Mm-hmm. He's saying my staff will now call on the reporters, and then they give him. They go to the questions from either on the teleconference, like you just heard. And so Biden already has the questions, okay? And his staff has already typed out the answers for him. That's why he reads from the teleprompter and he'll say, move it down. Did you hear him? He says, move it down.
Yes.
So the question's already been given to the reporters, and this is why Trump calls it fake news. And then Biden is doing his best to read the answer. That's what's going on. That's why he says top line message. And you hear that? So it's just, they're hoping the poor fella can make it and be voted in, and then Kamala Harris will be de facto the president until Biden is probably removed sometime in 2021. He'll resign or whatever. His family will say he's just not capable of carrying on. So that's what's going on there. But it is embarrassing that, to me, it is. For them, because they can't even fake it.
But that has to worry the American people in the midst of the world that we're in the midst of all of the...
It worries some people, but the ham sandwich vote ham sandwich, they don't care if Joe Biden has dementia. They really don't.
It's anything but Trump.
Yes. Yeah.
Literally.
That's going to be what's on the ballot. November 3rd, are you for Trump or against Trump?
Right.
It doesn't matter who's running against him.
Yeah.
That you're right. Under normal conditions, you're right, Fred. It would bother people that the man who could be president is not mentally fit to be president.
So we have to wonder what percentage of the electorate is independent. And that's always the deciding factor in this. Yeah. It's where they're going
to
go.
I think we're down to 3%. 3 to 5%, because most people... have their minds made up. I think maybe 5 to 10% are not. Something could happen between now and November 3rd of a major nature that could change votes one way or another. All right, Dr. Frank Turek joins us now from North Carolina. How you doing, Frank?
Good. Why don't you give me that question I gave you?
Top line message. Scroll down.
I'm going to read it off my teleprompter right here.
That is so funny. The question comes in from the lady, and then Trump, and then Biden says, scroll down. Isn't it what he says?
Huh? Yeah, scroll down.
Scroll down so I can read the answer that's been prepared for me.
Well, you know, it is sad, really. You can't diagnose people just by looking at them, but there is something. He's lost something that he used to have. And his sharpness is quite obviously gone. He shouldn't be running for president.
No, he has good days and bad. He has good days and bad days, as all people do in that situation.
Right.
But you're right. He should not be running for president. I don't. out of all the people in the Democrat field, seemed like to me they could have selected somebody else that was sharper. And anyway. All right. Question today. The Old Testament of the Bible and slavery.
Yes.
Because we hear, you know, what about that, Frank?
Well, you hear this a lot, particularly skeptics and atheists will say, oh, the Bible supports slavery, and they read passages out of the Old Testament. And at face value, if you read them with the word slavery in your mind, the kind of slavery we had here in America 160 years ago, you would be horrified, because the Bible talks about things like buying and selling slaves. Well, that's what we did here 160 years ago. We all know that was immoral. Why would the Bible condone that? And what people don't seem to realize is that the word slavery that is translated from the Hebrew in the Old Testament into English is really just another word for work. It doesn't mean the kind of slavery we had here 160 years ago. In fact, in the Old Testament, the slavery that the Bible talks about was not race-based forced servitude. It was actually indentured servitude. It was a voluntary means of working off debt. That was the primary means or the primary meaning of what we called slavery in the Old Testament. It was more like an employer-employee relationship. It wasn't the kind of slavery we had here 160 years ago, and people don't know that. In fact, what many don't know either is that the idea of kidnapping people, which was basically how slavery was conducted here 160 years ago, is actually condemned in both the Old Testament and the New Testament. In the Old Testament, it was punishable by death, which means that if we took the Old Testament law and applied it 160 years ago in this country, we would have executed slave traders. So now there's a lot more on this. The reason we're talking about this is because we put a short video on our website, on our YouTube channel, about slavery that was taken from an event I did at the University of Nebraska earlier this year, where a young person asked me the question about slavery. And so I gave about a 3-minute answer, sort of what I'm saying to you here right now. And we put it up there, and a lot of skeptics were saying, well, what about this and what about that in the Old Testament? And I said, look, you can't cover everything in a 3-minute answer. If you really want to go more deeply into this subject, you need to get a book by my friend Paul Copan. It's called Is God a Moral Monster? And so I'd recommend that to our listeners right now. Get the book Is God a Moral Monster? Because it goes into this issue and many others. Because when we read the Old Testament, we're reading something that, you know, is at least 3,000 or so years old in a different culture. And many of the words that we use, such as slavery, to describe what went on back then are not the kind of things that went on here in the antebellum South 160 years ago.
Yeah, you know, America, though, invented slavery.
That's right? What people say. Yes, it's exactly the opposite. We're one of the few countries that got rid of it, in addition to Britain and a few others. Slavery has been around forever. It's only in recent years did slavery, although it's still practiced in the world today, but in the Western countries, has been eradicated, primarily by Christians.
Well, you never know that listening to the mainstream media or this all these these far-left Marxist ideologies that are going around. They'll blame everything on American slavery, and that's supposed to be the end of discussion right there.
The other problem too, Tim, is the fact that most people's historical perspective is basically the first page of a Google search. You know,
duly noted.
They don't really go much further back than that.
You got this 1619 project, you know, out there that the president said on Friday. If you don't know what that is, that's the idea that America began with slavery in 1619, and everything grows out of that.
That's just demonstrably false. Not only that, when atheists or skeptics say to me, well, slavery's wrong, of course I'm going to agree with them,
But I'm going to ask them, if you're an atheist, by what standard could it be wrong? There's no right or wrong in an atheistic, materialistic world. We're just molecular machines. We're just survival of the fittest. We're, you know, Darwin, social Darwinism is the way if there is no God. There's no right or wrong about anything. So by what standard are you judging slavery to be wrong? You know what you're doing? You're stealing it from God. You're stealing that moral standard from God to say slavery's wrong while at the same time claiming God doesn't exist. You can't have it both ways. The only way something can be right or wrong is if God exists, because his nature is the standard of goodness, and any deviation from that nature is what we'd call evil. So there are people out there who are literally atheists, and they're protesting without a standard. They have no standard by which to say anything's right or wrong, including slavery, murder, anything else, any kind of injustice, because there is no justice if atheism's true. Everything's just a matter of opinion.
You just bingoed.
Yeah.
You just that's a great answer. Where can I read what you just laid out?
Well, that's in our book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. So
I've noticed at your website?
That's crossexamined.org, crossexamined with a D on the end of it. And then here on what's going to be Saturday at 9 a.m. Central, 10 Eastern, we'll do another I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist program.
You know, the left wing in this country always used the term justice for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's no definition of what justice really is.
Right.
Except whatever it is that they want to happen is justice, I guess.
Can I ask you guys this? Because I've been looking for this and I haven't seen specifics. Have you seen anybody identify areas that this country is systematically racist? In other words, have they said, okay, the way we're doing this, whatever this is systematically racist? Has anyone seen anybody identify that?
No, it's better to leave it ambiguous. That way you can claim it forever. Right?
Walker, Fred, they'll
talk about how the justice system is rigged, how it's systematically built to hurt minorities. But as far as getting into the specifics and pointing out things that make sense, they won't go that deep.
Because I'm telling you, as Christians. Go ahead, Fred. Sorry.
Yeah, no, they would be afraid, because the actual stats, which our attorney general used the other night in an interview on CNN, when you actually go to the statistics, the crime statistics in this country, it's anything but systematic racism.
Right.
Yeah, but that's just one element of what they're talking about. I would think they're just talking about the whole country's racist from the get-go.
I will say this. I do think the way that we fund public schools disadvantages minorities. In other words, it's based on property taxes. So if you're in a good neighborhood, you got a better school. If you're in a poor neighborhood, you have a worse school. That's why one of the reasons I'm for school choice, right? I think that does disadvantage minorities. And so we ought to be for school choice. But I don't think it was intended to disadvantage minorities. I don't think it was put in there purposefully to disadvantage minorities, but it does. So what can we do? I think we can even the playing field, or try to level the playing field through school choice. And the Republicans are for that. The Democrats are not. Yet they're claiming that is a problem. Well, how are they going to fix it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good points. All right. Visit Frank's website, crossexamined.org. Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it, brother.
Hey, thanks, guys. Great being with you. God bless.
All right, you too. That's Dr. Frank Turek, T-U-R-E-K. All right, much more to discuss and talk about. Sandy Rios will be joining us in a moment. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. We'll see you back in just a minute.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III.
Saying things about lives mattering, I've said this before, is woefully insufficient. Lives don't just matter. Life is sacred. Because because of the one who stamped us with his image and his likeness.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. In March, we're going on our annual trip to the Holy Land. And if you want to go with us, get the brochure or visit the website, twholyland.com. twholyland.com. We're going to go to Israel. We're going to go to Jerusalem. So much to see there. Bethlehem, the Dead Sea. We're going to the Jordan River, where we'll have a baptismal service. We're going to ride a boat on the Sea of Galilee. We're going to so many places you've read about your whole life in the Bible. It's going to be the trip of a lifetime. If you would like to come with us, again, go to the website twholyland.com, twholyland.com. It's in March, March 16th through the 24th. If you want a free brochure sent to your home, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. I need you to do something right now, folks. Text #250 with the keyword baby. We are in a crisis point in American history, and there is growing concern that the nation's abortion rate is about to explode. So I need your help right now to save the life of an unborn child. And that's why I'm partnering with Preborn, an organization equipping pregnancy centers with ultrasound machines. 80% of women who have an ultrasound save their child. So get on your phone right now. Text #250 with the keyword baby. Text #250 with the keyword baby. What a strange time to live in America, where the land of the free is not so free. For years, our civil liberties have been under assault from a militant army of secularists, leftists, and anarchists waging a fierce war on the First and Second Amendments. I warn people in my book, Culture Jihad, that we were on the verge of losing cherished values, and my fears have been proven true. 62% of Americans say they are now afraid to share their political beliefs. That's according to a new study from Cato. 77% of conservatives say they censor themselves, afraid their political opinions might offend people, afraid they might lose their job or be publicly shamed by the cancel culture mob. In other words, conservative Americans are being bullied into silence. That's not just un-American, that's unconstitutional. Be sure to listen to my national radio show, noon to 3 Eastern, or you can download the free podcast at toddstarnes.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments at afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman and Fred Jackson. We thank you for listening to American Family Radio. Walker, you want to tell folks how they can join us on the internet?
Yes, a couple of different ways. You can always visit
our hotline message. Oh, excuse me. Sorry. I was reading.
Reading the teleprompter.
Yeah.
The first way is to visit our website, afr.net. You can listen live at afr.net, but you can also listen to past shows. You can download the American Family Radio app on your smartphone or your tablet device. And lastly, you can follow us on Facebook and YouTube. Just type in the name of the show, Today's Issues, on Facebook and YouTube, and you can watch the show there.
Sandy Rios joins us most Tuesdays when she can, and she is Director of Governmental Affairs for AFA and host of Sandy Rios in the Morning here on American Family Radio from 7 to 8 o'clock Central Time each weekday morning. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning, Tim. Just 7 days ago, I was with you guys right there.
Yeah, that's right.
Seems like only yesterday.
I know. Just a week passed by in a blink. Well, it was good to see you and Bruce.
It was great. Yeah, we enjoyed that so much.
Absolutely. Fred, you had a question for Sandy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sandy, we're 56 days away from Election Day. And the Democrats keep trying to come up with something. They got the help of the Atlantic Magazine last week, where they said, Atlantic Magazine, that they had proof that the president, a trip to France, I think it was 2018, that he disparaged the troops, and they're a bunch of losers. It's been denied by a lot of people, including John Bolton. He says he was one of those that was in the room. He said the president, and of course, John Bolton, old friend of the president, said he never made such a remark. So It's absolutely amazing to me how much and how often the Democrats at this point are trying to bring up things they know aren't true. Joe Biden, when he responded last week, he said, now, we don't know if it's true, and then proceeded for 15 minutes to behave and tell the American people it was true.
Oh, they don't, you know, truth is not important to them. It hasn't been for a long time. And I'm just hoping that people, I know that our listeners know this because we talk about it a lot, but I think that there's still a vast, big swath of Americans who cannot believe that media and Americans who they think love the country like they do would lie like this. But they are lying, and they're doing everything they can. It's the gloves off. I just read that Cohen, his former attorney, who's now written a book, says that about Christians, evangelicals, that he made the statement, who would believe things like that? Who would believe what they believe? Calling them stupid. So that's Michael Cohen's latest. That came out this week.
Well,
they're going after whatever they can. We can just expect it's going to be more and more and worse as the days go by here.
It wouldn't surprise me if Donald Trump hadn't said that in his life probably multiple times. What you just said about evangelical Christianity, he wasn't a believer.
Right.
So a lot of
people. Right. Well, the context of that is that Michael says that he said that after a group of Christians leaders prayed over him in the White
House. You know
what?
Michael Cohen has zero credibility. That's the lawyer for President Trump.
Former.
I mean, he has said a lot of things that were unprovable or either provably wrong.
Right.
Let me ask you this about the setting where the Atlantic magazine claims that President Trump said things that were disparaging of the troops. Was that a World War I memorial? Or what was that, Normandy? Where was that? What was going on?
Well, it was some commemoration. I really don't know, Tim.
Okay.
I'm not sure I'm not sure if it was World War I or World War II. They were scheduled to go to another battle site, another place where people were buried.
Right.
And what the article claims is that he didn't want to go see. He didn't want to go.
They had bad weather.
So he said that, but he did. They're not. That's not what the Atlantic said.
Okay.
Atlantic said he didn't want to go because he didn't want to, you know, go see those losers, the ones that had died. And so we have email, inside email that's been released showing that it was raining and that President Trump had nothing to do with that decision. Even John Kelly's chief aide, who was with them the entire time, has come out saying, that just never happened. It was raining. We made the call that we shouldn't go. And President Trump just listened to what the people on the ground were saying, and they didn't go. That's it. You know, when you think about it, just common sense tells you that if any of us, let's just say any of us, somebody said on Facebook that four people, had told them that we said X, Y, or Z. Tim, you're the leader of the American Family Association. They could say, I'm not even going to make anything up. Let's just say they could report that you said something really bad. And this Facebook post would say, you know, four people who were there said he said that. But they wanted, they're anonymous because the word that was used by the Atlantic Monthly was, They didn't want to go on record because they were afraid of mean tweets. That was the reason that was given. Now, come on. Who of us in our daily lives can live that way? Who can have four anonymous people saying that we said something 2 years ago and they're not willing to come forward because they are worried about mean tweets? That's just not credible.
Yeah.
That's not credible.
What do you think, what's her name at Fox? Griffin?
Jennifer Griffin.
What do you think about her? She believes it, right?
I have watched Jennifer change through the years. Jennifer is a Christian. At least she was. By whatever definition, I've had conversations with her. You know, she went through cancer and lost her hair. And she has been a really fine reporter. But I have watched as she has been on that Pentagon beat now for several years. I have watched her change. I've watched her reporting change. I picked it up. I've picked it up a long time ago. This is not sudden. The only thing I can figure is she is surrounded by people that hate President Trump. The Pentagon is gone, has gone to the left. It's gone over to the dark side a long time ago. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe that, just think about what happened when President Trump walked across to St. John's Church and held up that Bible, and the general came out and, I didn't know he was going to do that publicly. His general, the president is the commander in chief. This guy works for him, and felt free to come out and disparage his commander in chief, whether it was true or not. Mm-hmm. Just the insubordination was unbelievable. That's just a tip of the iceberg of what's going on in the Pentagon. So Jennifer's been there now, I would say probably at least 10 years. I'm just guessing, but a long time. And I have seen her change. And, you know, we all are influenced by who we hang out with and what we hear, aren't we?
Sandy, it seems as if the mantra of the Democrats and the media is watch what we say, not what we do. Because when you look at actions and things that matter, President Trump has been one of the best presidents when it comes to the military in modern history. When you talk about the veterans, VA, you talk about... bringing troops home, you talk about giving them a raise, taking care of our military. You look at President Obama, he gutted the Department of Defense budget multiple years in a row, which led to a very harmful effect of military readiness. And then he did all the social experiments with transgenderism and homosexuality in the military. And so all of the actions show otherwise when it comes to President Trump in this alleged statement.
So it would be, what you're saying, would be totally out of character for the president to disparage our military while at the same time being a vocal and substantive supporter of the military his whole time
presidency
in office.
Yes.
Well, he has a long history of respecting the military. Before he even got into the presidency, I had a couple of things I didn't get a chance to talk about on my show this morning about things that he said and done in the past that show tremendous respect. His concern for the wars. You know, he's been against having our troops all over the globe losing their lives when it wasn't in American interests. That's been a theme for him for a long time because he cares about them. And, you know, there's just been, well, I would say a mini glut, if not a glut, of people defending him in the military who've had interactions, who've watched him. You know, one of the first things he did, as Walker just said, he's beefed up the military. It had atrophied under Barack Obama. So... it just defies logic. It's just not true. And I would say this, Walker, in regard to you saying that the Democrats don't look at what people do. They like to, in their case, it doesn't matter so much what they do. In other words, virtue signaling is all about saying the right things, not doing the right things. That's why they are all the time hypocritical. The Nancy Pelosi thing where she, you know, she's not wearing a mask and she's getting her hair done where no one else in San Francisco can. Then Anthony Fauci, you know, going to the ball game when no one else can and not wearing a mask and not social distancing. They have a different, it doesn't really matter what they do. What matters is what they say. Mm-hmm. They have a very different view of things. So you could, like Al Gore, he's so concerned about the planet, you know, and he flies these huge planes and guzzles up all of this fuel, fossil fuel that he declares, you know, for other people, it's horrible. For him, it's okay.
All the policies for the left are for the little people.
Yes,
not for the elite. And that's why you see so many, call them liberals, limousine liberals is what the term is. Sandy, let me ask you this. Are you, we were talking about this before you came on with us, I believe. Are you surprised by the open and some would say, I guess, brazen, I don't know if brazen is the right word, but talking about Vice President Trump and the way he's being managed is so apparent that, you know, the media can't ask him hard questions. His team around him is giving questions to people who do Zoom so that he can have a script to answer. And he talks about this, scroll down, top line message. He's reading things that shouldn't be read from the teleprompter. that indicate, you know, just what I've said.
Turn the page.
Yeah, I mean,
whatever he says.
Are you?
You're talking about Biden.
Yeah, I'm talking about Biden. I mean, are you surprised that they're being so open about the way that they're just not letting him? He doesn't want to do an hour with Chris Wallace, for example. He didn't want to do an hour with anybody, I would think. Anyway, what do you think about
it? Well, in the words of what Michelle Obama, it is what it is. They have a man who cannot function.
Right.
And they have no choice but to be, they can't hide it. What are they going to do? Put a dummy inside his body and wave its head? I mean, he cannot, it is what it is. And I think he's getting worse. I really do. And I don't know if we talked about this, but one thing that really struck me was when he was in Kenosha and the room was, I couldn't believe how few people came to hear him speak, first of all. He's mm-hmm. behind a mask and he's talking like this. Mm-hmm. And the first person up was this young black woman in kind of a orange headgear, African looked. And so she goes up, and we may have talked about this, and she has this card in her hand, and the first thing she says is, I know I'm supposed to say what's on this card.
Yeah.
But I want to. I really want to talk about what I think, and that's how it started. It's just unbelievably transparent that they are. They have to manage him, Tim. That's the only choice they have. The stunning thing to me is that it doesn't seem to be normally. Let me just throw this out for everyone to think about. Normally, a press under normal circumstances and days would notice that. Mm-hmm. They would remark on the fact that the candidate is only getting easy questions,
right,
or that he's not calling on the press. His aide has picked out people in the audience to call on. Oh, they would notice that the girl said, I know I'm supposed to read from this card, but I want to tell you what I think. They would notice. They would observe it. But silence,
can I tell us something. Can I play you a little cut to go exactly what Sandy is talking about? Here's Joe Biden at an alleged news conference the other day. It's cut number 3.
Kazir Khan said that the comments demonstrated that President Trump's life is a testament to selfishness and that his soul is that of a coward. But when you hear these remarks, suckers, losers, recoiling from amputees, what does it tell you about President Trump's soul and the life he leads?
You said today is the angriest you've been as a presidential candidate. Are there a lot of people out there who are supporting you or are inclined to not vote for the president who would say, why isn't Joe Biden angrier about all of this?
Now, that was after the whole story broke in the Atlantic.
Those were questions.
Those were reporters. The first one was actually worked for the Atlantic. What do you think about Trump's soul?
I know. In fact, at one point in that, I was listening to that live, and in fact, there were 3 or 4 questions that obviously the Biden team had colluded with the reporters to either give them the questions to ask. With that Atlantic, that was just embarrassing. He was stuttering over reading his own question. And the thing about it is, at one point, Biden says this to the reporter, well, that's a rhetorical question. No, in other words, you know and I know the answer to your question. Why are you even asking it?
Yeah. And even so you know that I know that you know that I know. Do you remember that moment in the Justice Thomas movie, Created Equal?
Yeah.
When Justice Thomas was, you know, having his hearing way back in the 90s before the Judiciary Committee, and Joe Biden was the chairman. And there's this famous interaction where Joe is trying to get Clarence Thomas to admit that he's pro-life, and he's saying, you know that I know,
right,
that you know that I, you and I know, you know, so it reminds me of that.
Exactly. You're listening to the radio
That's
program.
That's a rhetorical question.
Today's issues. Well, for a presidential candidate to say to a reporter, you've just asked a rhetorical question, only proves the point that we're making here. That the question is a statement, really, to trying to help the vice president out here. It's an assumption of quote facts that the left believes that I'm going to have you comment on. It's embarrassing, and they're going to try to carry this out. The only risk that the Democrats run here by keeping Joe Biden in the basement or from you know, he's not going to have to answer difficult questions, which means he can't make, which lessens the chances for him making a real serious faux pas. Which, by the way, he already did was saying he would shut the economy down again if the scientists told him to.
Mm-hmm.
He had to walk back his national face mask. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of things that could swing voters right there if they think he's going to do those kinds of things. So he had to walk them back. The defund the police, he's trying to say, no, I never said that. I'm not for that. So those things he's trying to manage from the left, you know, to try not to be too far left wing to that 5 or 10% of the public that maybe hasn't made up their mind yet. But all right. Sandy, thanks so much for being on with us. Appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome, Tim. Could I just say
a
couple of things? Could I just quickly say, I wish we could laugh about this more.
Right.
On its face, it is funny and pathetic, but the scary thing is that he might win. And we see who's behind him, Kamala Harris, and we see who's running. It's people that are affiliated with Black Lives Matter. They are very close to the Trump team, the Biden team. And it's a very dangerous time. We only have, 50 days, as Fred said, 50-something days. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to encourage people to sign up to work at the polls. Please, please, please call your county office and get hired to work inside the poll. Not a volunteer. Work at the poll. Do not mail your ballot in. Go to the polls and vote. There's too much danger right now. I just got a text from the president asking me to be sure, you know, ask for a mail-in ballot. Because that's the Republican line. I'm not doing that. Not doing that. I told my listeners this morning, I don't care who asks you to do it. Don't do it. You go to the polls and vote, because there's way too much fraud. 20% of the 20% of ballots that are mailed in are lost on a good day. Mm-hmm. And so besides all the chicanery, it's dangerous. So those are things people can actually do. And I just wanted to, thanks for letting me be able to say that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Go to the polls and vote. Whatever you have to do, go to the polls and vote. Now, unless you're going to vote absentee, you know, if you're going to be out of town, make sure you vote anyway. But absentee, which is another issue, because the Democrats and the liberal media are intentionally conflating absentee voting by mail-in voting.
Correct.
So that's another issue. All right. Thanks, Sandy. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Talk to you guys next week.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. That's Sandy Rios. I've just never seen a candidate almost of any kind that's facing the kind of opposition.
Mm. One-sided.
That's why I've said it'll be a miracle of God.
Yes.
If Donald Trump wins his second term. And I don't mean that to suggest I don't believe he can't, or because I still think that's in question. But
it's what he's up against.
What he's up against is unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about what's going on in this election campaign right now as really being a manifestation of spiritual warfare. And that's what it is. When you see people willing to outright lie about things, the complicity of the media in all of this, I've been in the news media for over 40 years now. I have never in my life seen reporters put up the white flag saying, I'm biased and I am rooting for this candidate. That's what the mainstream media is doing every day. They are there to help Joe Biden get elected.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have enough discipline, enough professionalism, these journalists, to try to hide their bias.
Not anymore.
Now they're rewarded for it. You get hired because you believe what candidate believes. We have to understand this.
Right. No, there's no objective journalism. You know, I went to journalism school in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they taught you to be objective and to give both sides of a story,
mm-hmm.
and to not let your personal biases influence your, you know, your reporting or your, and that was a matter of pride for people. Now, for journalists at the time, I'm saying,
right.
And now today, and you're right. Most journalists have been liberal for a long time. We've known that. I mean, mm-hmm. I think 90. 89% of the Washington journalists, Washington, D.C. journalists at the time said they voted for Bill Clinton.
Correct.
This goes back to the 90s. So we know that this is, that's our 80s. That's been the case for a long time, that the mainstream media liberal. But at least they tried to hide it or tried to not be so obviously and blatant with their views. But they just, man, they have TDS bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing that's really brought it more to light is the fact that now we have more alternative media outlets. You have One News Now, you have Breitbart, you have many other, you could call them smaller, but they're not mainstream media outlets. They're relatively young media outlets that are reporting things from a neutral, mostly neutral perspective. And now we have that comparison, that contrast that we haven't had. You didn't have that 30 years ago. You didn't have that before the internet. It was, you had the main players, the main networks and the main papers, and that was it. There wasn't an alternative viewpoint. But now with social media and the internet, you have a lot of other options out there.
Well, I do think, too, there's a certain level of personal hatred for President Trump by these people because he fights back against them on a personal level. All right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He'll call them out on a tweet.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't like that.
No.
They don't like being embarrassed like that, or they don't like being called out. Or so then they'll fire back, and they so it's both an ideological war and a personal hatred for the president because he fights back against them all the time. Mm-hmm. George W. Bush had a totally different demeanor. Of course, this is before social media took off, but I remember Allison, my wife, would also often say, well, I don't know why George Bush doesn't defend himself. Huh?
Yes.
He just never seemed to defend himself in his, and it was, I guess sometimes there that's, you let others defend you, but there are certain times that you need to stand up for your own ideas and fight back. Fight back, you know, tough.
Right.
And I think that's what the media, especially the test about, it's kind of like, how dare you fight back against us and call us out and do, and so they've lost their objectivity such that it was, I'm talking about the left-wing media, to even pretend anymore because they're like, oh yeah, we'll take you down.
Yeah.
Donald Trump, we can't stand you and we're all together on this.
Yep.
But just to remind folks again, what the president's up against is he's up against China, right? Yes. China, right? He's up against the virus, which the left-wing media blames him for.
Right.
Right. Which that's, he's getting mixed reviews on that. He's up against the liberal media. He's up against the social media giants.
Mm-hmm.
He's up against the Republican deep state, the Republican establishment. Not all of them, but a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are out front. Some of them are behind the scenes. The European Union.
Yes.
Hollywood. Huh?
Yep. The entire Democrat Party.
The whole Democrat Party. So, I mean, other than that, he ought to sail.
It's a fair fight.
It's a fair fight. Oh, my word. Huh?
I know.
That's like, all right. Fred, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That's Fred Jackson. We'll be joined by Steve Jordahl coming up in 5 minutes. And we've got a lot more news to talk about here on Today's Issues on American Family Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.